This is Dialogue Conspiracy, a public affairs presentation of KLRB News. Dialogue Conspiracy is a program which shares the political research of Mae Bressel. Her almost 10 years of work are based on the theory that government is moved as much or more by conspiracy than by any democratic process. And for KLRB, I'm Phil Kogan. May, let's jump right into the program today.
Okay. Ready. Talk about conspiracy. Should we talk about the conspiracy against the FBI? There's a charge.
Okay, leveled by, it's reported by the Associated Press last Wednesday, 31st of May. A federal grand jury has been ordered to investigate an informer's charges that the FBI and the U.S. attorney in Seattle were involved in illegal conspiracies to obstruct justice. So the story reported by the Associated Press, as we said. This U.S. District Court order was based on charges brought yesterday by David Sanes, I guess is the way it's pronounced, S-A-N-N-E-S, charges against Stan Pitkin, U.S. Attorney for Western Washington, and the FBI. Sanes alleges that the FBI conspired in a bombing plan, in a felony, and in obstruction of justice, and that Pitkin has conspired to conceal such activities on the part of the FBI. Sanes pleaded guilty of improper disposing of rubbish, dumped 3 pounds of cow manure in the first floor lobby of the U.S. courthouse on April 5th as a war protest, and he tried to include in his opening remarks alleged confessions of 5 persons admitting to conspiring to obstruct justice. When the judge in the case, Judge William T. Beeks, ordered him to stick to the issues, Sanes said he had been trying for about a year to bring into court his charges. The FBI instructed him as an informer to allow a bombing to take place and to, quote, make sure that the man who set the bomb died in a booby-trapped explosion, unquote. The judge in the case then ordered the government to take Sanes before a federal grand jury, which is where he's going now.
Well, what he did, he's been trying for a year to say that the federal government, the FBI, hire agents to bomb buildings, and then they kill the person that they've hired to do it. This was the charge that Louis Tackwood made about Los Angeles at the San Diego Convention for Squad 19, the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department, was to hire radicals and young people to bomb buildings and kill people at the San Diego Convention as an excuse to round up the radicals in a manner identical to the way Hitler did when he gained power in Germany. And then they were to kill the people they hired. So this young informer up in Seattle said that he is charging the government with conspiracy. This is where it should be. I hope we'll talk about this during the show, how the Justice Department is guilty of conspiracy and planning conspiracies at every level, and of violence and of killing. And the only way that this man could be heard was to take pounds of cow manure and put them in to the federal building in the court and dump them there, and he put a lot of manure around the lobby of the court. Then he was arrested for putting the manure, and then in defending himself, he could bring out the reason he was doing it so that it's on the records. There was no way to get to court to get the federal government to answer the charges about wanting to murder the young radicals or bombing the building, so he just spread the manure around. And now his defense is that the way he did this was to get attention. But there should be suits coming out this year continuously on against the federal government as being the conspirators. We're talking about political assassinations and conspiracies. And my charge is that the federal government are the conspirators. In the paper this week, Phil, there was an article from new acting chief of the FBI, Patrick Gray III. The title reads, "No Way to Detect Probable Political Assassinations." This came out in the San Jose Mercury on Friday of this week, and I had just completed the day before an article for the conspiracy newsletter I'm writing on how the federal government is going to clean itself of all responsibility when Richard Nixon is going to be killed.
This article would be a week ago Friday.
No, it was just this week. This is Saturday. It was this week that this article came out, and I was writing before this came out the way the FBI and the Secret Service were clearing the way of any responsibility for further political assassinations. What Patrick Gray said is that gun control is an area that you never get guarantee, which is true. Then he said, you have to reach the hearts and minds of people. And how do you reach the heart and mind of an individual who apparently is so completely withdrawn from our society that he doesn't want to react as any of us do? End quote. Well, I think that the assassins are reacting in exactly the way that Patrick Gray III reacts. And I have, on a couple of other shows, mentioned his part in calling U.S. Attorney Robert Meyer in Los Angeles and firing him because Meyer was investigating the murders of Ruben Salazar by the Los Angeles Police Department and Jerry Leon May, a black veteran who was home from Vietnam who was shot by the Los Angeles Police Department. Patrick Gray stops the investigation of the actual assassination squads in Los Angeles. I don't know how many he stopped, but I can name several cases that I know of that were political assassinations, and he interfered with the investigation. So the murderers are still out at large. They're on the streets to do their other crimes because they were never investigated and they're protected. So when he says that murderers don't react as any of us do, they react exactly as he does, and he protects them. People want to know what they can do after they listen to these shows. You could begin writing to members of the Senate and asking that Patrick Gray III be removed as the head of the FBI. You see, he wasn't named acting head. He's acting from the Justice Department, and he's now director of the FBI, because in order to be the head of the FBI, he'd have to have Senate approval. But by having a salary from the Justice Department and working from that office, nobody has to investigate the background of Patrick Gray III. Now, the FBI was under criticism, he claimed, for not being able to find people like Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan Sirhan, James Earl Ray. They were never listed in the FBI files. Well, of course they weren't listed. They were agents of the FBI. Why would they? They were assassins hired and protected by the FBI while they went around their various jobs and then framed by the Justice Department that they could never have trials. Lee Harvey Oswald was killed, Sirhan never had a fair trial, and James Ray can't have a trial at all. So how would you find these people as being the alleged assassins? They didn't kill the men that they are claimed to have killed. The name Justice Department is so confused, Phil. It's so turned around. It's the Department of Injustice, like 1984. The word is wrong. They are planning these assassinations and hiding the conspirators, and then claiming that you can't find these completely withdrawn people. They have a path to take before the gun goes off, and they are losing their traces. We've talked about this before, and they're not withdrawn. They're purposely losing their traces. The first half of the show today, I want to talk about Jim Garrison and what's happening in New Orleans, and the second half we'll talk about the Wallace shooting and the more evidence on Bramer that it was a conspiracy. But I want to give a little background on Jim Garrison. He was the gentleman who said that there was a conspiracy that killed John Kennedy, and that one of the people involved in the conspiracy was Clay Shaw, who lives in New Orleans, and Jim Garrison is the district attorney of New Orleans. And the trial was very difficult to conduct down there to convict Clay Shaw of conspiracy, because David Ferry was killed and Guy Bannister was killed, and the main people that Garrison wanted for that trial were all sent out of town. Gordon Novell went to Ohio, and the governor wouldn't extradite him, and Bradley came to California, and Regan wouldn't extradite him, and Sarge Ocasio-Smith went to Texas, and Conley wouldn't extradite him. Then a few of them were paid off. One was given a chain of motels in New Orleans, another one was given a bathhouse, and some were convicts on narcotic charges that were in jail that couldn't speak up at the trial. They were discredited. So Jim had a hard time running this case, and Clay Shaw was acquitted of any part of the conspiracy. Then Jim had evidence, Jim Garrison had evidence, that Clay Shaw lied at the trial. He charged with perjury and said that he did know David Ferry. He knew Lee Harvey Oswald. He had a group of many, many witnesses that saw these men together. But Jim Garrison couldn't have that trial. The federal government stopped in. And I'm reading from the New York Times, July 1971. It said, Mr. Garrison lost an attempt last year to convict Clay Shaw. He then filed perjury charges, but the federal judge ordered him to stop further prosecution of Mr. Shaw. So the federal government stop Jim Garrison from prosecuting Clayshaw on a perjury charge. Now, what happened was that John Mitchell, in July 1971, John Mitchell and the Justice Department, through a U.S. attorney, Gerald Galinghouse, in New Orleans, arrested Jim Garrison on a charge of taking bribes for illegal pinball gambling in New Orleans. This is John Mitchell, Attorney General John Mitchell, had Jim Garrison taken off from his home and handcuffed and fingerprinted, and Time Magazine was there, and the Associated Press, the New York Times, and they took pictures and gave a lot of publicity to the fact that Jim Garrison was doing something illegal in New Orleans and that the Justice Department had investigated him regarding payoffs. And the man who triggered Jim Garrison as doing the payoffs, his name is Pershing Gervais. He was a private detective that worked for Jim Garrison in the New Orleans area. He worked for him from 1962 to 1965. He was his close friend. And this man delivered money to Jim Garrison's home. And then the money was marked, and he brought it to Jim. And the money was marked, and Jim Garrison was fingered as accepting this pinball dealer's money. And Mitchell put a federal charge against him that would give him 5 years in prison and a $70,000 fine if he was found guilty. And they named some other law enforcement men in the New Orleans area that were guilty. And the Justice Department said he took up to $1,500 a month in bribes. Jim Garrison said, "I never took a dollar in my life." Well, Pershing Gervais took the money to Jim Garrison's home. The federal government came in and took pictures of Garrison, arrested him. This was in July 1971. We're in May of 1972, and some news came out. We mentioned it briefly on our show last week. And then my New Orleans papers came. In the area here, if you take the San Francisco Chronicle, the San Jose Mercury, you don't see a thing of the new revealing of evidence of Pershing Gervais. And I'm going to read you what Gervais said, because I have the details on the charges now. And I cross-filed this. This is the way I do my research. The newspaper article, it was in the New Orleans State's item of May 25th, 1972, telling about what the Justice Department did to Jim Garrison, makes a lot of charges, and they fit in. If I read this article and explain it with the people listening to this show, you will understand how I do my research and how it fits into the pattern of political assassinations that we talk about so often. Pershing Gervais claimed that the Justice Department forced him to make a false affidavit against Jim Garrison and then arranged a fake job for him in Canada to keep him out of sight. He names three people in the Justice Department. The names are Gerald Schur, Rees Cash, and Kathy Kimroof. And they came to him and said, told him to plant this evidence against Jim Garrison. This was a job that he was to do. Then he was to take his wife and family, children, to Oregon on a little vacation and go to Vancouver in British Columbia. And they gave him a job. His first job in Canada was to spy on a government, on an oil company, and find out why they weren't given certain drilling rights, why the company wasn't given drilling rights. And he backed down. He didn't want to spy on this oil company, and he backed down on doing this to the oil company, and the Justice Department was mad. And they were afraid, I guess, that Gervais would talk, which is what he's finally doing. So they got him in touch with what they call a field traffic manager of General Motors. Now, this is the way the Justice Department hides its traces of being involved in planting people in new occupations after they have framed somebody for them and done their work. They call General Motors in Detroit, and General Motors calls Ottawa, Canada. It talks to the president of General Motors, and a job was arranged for Gervais for $18,000 a year. Now, he didn't do anything at General Motors. The money was payoff for his framing Jim Garrison, so he's on the payroll of General Motors in Canada, and he isn't doing anything. Now, he goes to Washington immediately after he plants his evidence on Garrison, and they change his name to Paul Mason. And this is why it's so hard to trace these assassins, and in my cross-filing system, I have aliases, you know, galore, and all kinds of different names. He had his name changed to Paul Mason by the Justice Department. And then his child was given a new birth certificate because he was ready to start school in Canada.
Now, on a point like that, what might be considered a relatively minor point, How does the Justice Department justify changing a person's name and his daughter's name? Is there a reason given?
Well, yes, the reason, I'll continue through the two articles, and the reason is obvious. They have framed Jim Garrison, and they're paying off the person. They're going to give $18,000
a year. That's what you're saying, but I mean, what is the upfront reason that they say they're doing this?
Well, right now...
They're not going to say they're doing it because they framed Jim Garrison.
Well, the Canadian Mounted Police have come out, and the contact man who was to arrange the contacts and safety for... Gervais in Canada. His name is Mr. Blakemore, and the Canadian Mounted Police said that this particular man was left the Mounted Police this week. He's not working anymore. He retired. You see, he retired. Then the commissioner in Mr. Higgett in Ottawa, who's the head of the intelligence unit of Royal Canadian Mounted Police, said we don't talk about things like that. Now, if they don't talk about it, certainly our Justice Department, Mr. Patrick Gray and John Mitchell aren't going to talk about it yet. You asked the question, what does our Justice Department say about it? The interview that Gervais gave was in Canada from a Canadian radio station. Our Associated Press, United Press, the people in this country don't even know this is happening except in the New Orleans State's item, Jim Garrison's local paper. But it didn't even make the front pages there. When Jim was arrested, it makes the front pages. When it finds out that the Justice Department framed him, it makes the third or fifth page of his local paper. But why would the Justice Department explain what they're doing when they keep from you what they're doing?
So there hasn't been an explanation.
Until you ask them, until people, we talk about in Carmel that this is a small town and we reach a small geographical area. Until all of the United States realizes what happened and the senators and the congressmen, then they ask the Justice Department, and Justice Department will answer like they did in the ITT, we didn't do anything wrong. They have one pat answer. They have their cover story. But first... people have to ask them what they think about this, and the people in this country are totally uninformed. So it's a vicious circle. What he went on to say was that he went to the Canadian government with introductions. He had the false name, and Canada was told to hire him. And the Justice Department gave him also a minister's permit. You see, when you go to Canada, you have to have an excuse for being employed. Because they're having a shortage of jobs and unemployment. So you have to guarantee that you can support yourself if you go in. They don't just let an American cross the border and take a job a Canadian has. But their excuse for doing this is that Gervais's life might be in danger if he stayed in the United States, if he was found. So they'll give asylum or jobs if they protect somebody. So they gave him a minister's permit. And this, again, goes into the whole framework of churches, because I have 200 or 300 typewritten pages of ministers that are intelligence agents, that are spies and intelligence agencies, that it's a conduit of funds through various church groups. And all the people working on political assassinations know how the conduit of funds runs through the church groups. Remember the show we did about Albert Osborne, the missionary in Mexico City, who ran a school for assassins that go all over the world, that kill political people all over the world, and they're all dressed as missionaries, and they're funded through church groups as a front. So he was given a minister's permit.
Is that refers to a man of the cloth and not necessarily a permit from the prime minister or something?
Well, the prime minister of Canada doesn't have anything to do with it. There are intelligence agencies in the Canadian government that, like there are here, and we exchange spies and protection. So our country says he's a minister, and they let him preach, in quotes, at General Motors for $18,000 a year. See, they have to manipulate the Canadian books, too, so that the Canadian people don't feel that too many Americans are getting in illegal and getting jobs. So they have to manipulate everything up there, what the reason for his getting in. So he gets a minister's permit using the cloth, again, the church, which the church trip and the justice thing are so confused in our society, you know, the role that they're playing. And he lives up in Canada, and then his child is 6 years old and ready to go to school. Then they have to issue a fake birth certificate. Now, you can see how I crossfile this. When you have James Ray up in Canada, within a mile of where he lives, he has birth certificates and passports from three people that live in the area that he does, and Mr. Gauld, and a Mr. Bridgman, and a Mr. Sneed. And he's using all these aliases, or he gets out of the Missouri jail. Remember last week we said with a Social Security card by the name of Rain, so he can start a job as soon as he's sprung out of jail. Issuing the aliases is nothing new to me. To see it in the news and to see so many of the things I talk about exemplified in one article that just happened this week is maybe better to explain on the air, because people who have followed these shows can see that I've made charge that these things are happening. And one of the interesting things is that Pershing Gervais has not only made the charges, but he's naming a lot of people, and that's his protection, because they don't want to take the rap. This is the first time that a lot of charges have been made where he's actually mentioning the people. So he said he went to Vancouver, the General Motors office, and that he was employed there. Now, Gervais had filled out a 107-page affidavit against Jim Garrison, and he has said that he was advised by the Justice Department after he did it to hide out. Now Gervais is surfacing, and he says it comes down to this. I've been working at a fake job in Canada since January. I've been living there since last July. That's when the charges against Garrison came down. And it was all because of connivance between the Justice Department, the Canadian government, and General Motors. Now, this article that I'm reading has no wire service on it. This comes straight from the New Orleans paper. So the ABUP Reuters hasn't picked it up. He says, I'm only here with a fake job, a fake name, receiving money, you see, for services I didn't do because of the connivance of our Justice Department and Canada and General Motors. And then he said, I'm heading back to New Orleans, and I'm taking my time about it. Now, that was May 25th that he was heading back to New Orleans. On May 26th, the New Orleans paper had another article, again, not Associated Press, United Press, that there's a contract to kill Pershing Gervais in New Orleans for saying what he did. Now, the Justice Department killed David Ferry when Lee Harvey Oswald was dead and Jack Ruby was dead and Jim Garrison was conducting this trial. The most important witness in the New Orleans area that he needed was David Ferry, and David Ferry was killed just as soon as Garrison mentioned his name. The name Ferry wasn't new to Garrison. He was with the FBI telling them about David Ferry the night that John Kennedy was killed, and he was waiting at David Ferry's place to arrest him as being suspicious of having wanted to kill Kennedy for the role that he took with the anti-Castro Cubans in the area and his verbal attacks on wanting Kennedy killed. And he had a lot of other reasons to suspect David Ferry, but the FBI let David Ferry off and didn't even mention his name in the Warren report, and of course he wasn't called as a witness. So when Patrick Gray III talks about these funny assassins that are completely withdrawn and don't react as any of us do, David Ferry may have been a withdrawn person, but the FBI could have drawn him out to come before the Warren Commission to say where he was the night of the assassination and the day of the assassination of John Kennedy. So you have Pershing Gervais coming back to New Orleans. And there's a contract now to kill him. He has a lot of courage. He's given up this dirty little game. And what he said, this is very interesting, he said that he was hired at General Motors, and they just said, he met the president of General Motors, who for some reason wanted to see him, and they just gave him a job and said, go to work, and he didn't do anything at General Motors at all. He didn't do any part as a salesman or serve any purpose. His $18,000 a year was to be just a payoff. Well, when Jim Garrison first surfaced years ago and charged Clay Shaw with conspiracy, I picked up the telephone from Carmel Valley and called the district attorney's office at New Orleans and said, go to Raleigh Coffee Company in New Orleans, because based upon my research, that is a CIA operation that they hire people who serve no purpose there, and it's a conduit of funds for agents, because when Lee Harvey Oswald worked there, the man who employed him was asked before the Warren Commission, what did Oswald do? And he said, well, we gave him a can, an oil can, and told him to go from the top all the way down to the bottom, from the sixth floor to the bottom. Well, Lee Harvey Oswald, who was trained in electronic work and radio work and microdotting and photographic techniques and all the complicated skills, Russian languages, all the skills that he had as an agent would serve no purpose just taking an oil can and going from the sixth floor down to the first, any more than just moving boxes of the depository, you know. So I knew that it was a... Then the landlady, oh, there's a landlady in New Orleans who was also called as a witness, and the Warren Commission said to her, tell us about Lee Harvey Oswald and the job he had and when did he go to work. And she said, well, I don't think he worked in the daytime because he was home all day at night. You know, he had a small baby and he'd sit out on the porch with his wife and he was home during the day, but at nighttime people came and he went out at night. So then I knew that he was receiving a paycheck from Raleigh Coffee, but he wasn't going to work in the daytime because she said he was home all day. So I knew the funds were for services rendered at the time that he wasn't actually working. So you have the same pattern in General Motors in Canada. And it's a thing which I picked up reading the testimony of the witnesses that turns out to be a habit. Don't you have a news bulletin here?
Well, it's a news item that sort of confirms that. And it's from, again, not one of the major wire services, but from a news service. It's an alternative news service in San Francisco called Zodiac News Service. It came out this past Wednesday, and I'll just read through it. And it substantiates some of what May has been saying. The U.S. Department of Justice admitted this week that it has made a practice of asking major American corporations to hire former Justice Department informers and spies so that they can be moved to out-of-the-way and inconspicuous places after completing their spy work. A department spokesman told Zodiac News that, and we quote, at least a dozen, but fewer than 100 informers, unquote, had been hired as a public service by numerous corporations after the informers had completed their assigned tasks with the Justice Department. The practice of large companies hiring ex-informers surfaced last week during a Canadian television interview with Pershing Gervais. Gervais stated that he had been hired by the Justice Department last year to entrap New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison, as we've been talking about. And it turns out that Gervais had been employed for the past 3 months by the General Motors Company in Vancouver, Canada, at an annual salary of $18,000. General Motors reports that it hired Gervais, quote, at the request of the Justice Department, unquote, after the department informed GM that it wanted to locate Gervais at, quote, an out-of-the-way location, unquote. The Justice Department acknowledged that the practice of asking corporations to hire ex-informers was very common and very successful. That, again, a quote. Said the Justice spokesman, we've seen to it that quite a few informers have been hired, although we can't give you a specific figure. When asked if IT&T had ever stepped forward to offer employment, the spokesman said he would not name any of the corporations involved, but he added they do it simply as a public service. And that is from Zodiac News.
Well, this confirms a lot of the research that I've done reading the witness testimony before the Warren Commission. There were 552 witnesses, and I noticed that certain people would be called in to give testimony, and they had a set occupation, and they came from a certain city, like Wellesley Frazier, the man who went in the book depository that took Oswald there the morning of the assassination. He lived across the street from where Lee Harvey Oswald's wife was living with Mrs. Ruth Payne. He moved into town in the fall of 63. He went to the depository and worked there maybe 2 months. And by the time the Warren Commission called him as a witness, he was in another city in another job. And I began to cross-file about 50, 60 people, and I made my own cross-filing classification called migratory birds, where people changed occupations, and all of a sudden a shoe salesman ends up at Lockheed Aircraft, or a gasoline station attendant is with the Dallas Police Force. And I, by reconstructing where these people came from and where they went, I realized that there was an entire military type of operation of people moving into town, being in strategic positions, and then leaving. By the time they were called as witnesses, they were on whole new occupations.
Okay, we'll get back with more on Dialogue Conspiracy after we identify the station. This is KLRB-FM, Carmel. Stereo 24 hours a day.